All right, well, there we go. It's like we've never done that this before.
Yep.
Boy. All right. Welcome to 2026, eh? Jesus.
Yep.
All right. Let me just make sure your camera is looking okay. Yeah, perfect. Thank you. And we do have somebody in YouTube also confirming. So it's favorites. I don't know. Sorry, favorite. I don't know how to say the rest of your name, but yes, thank
Just a
you.
second,
We
Thomas.
we've realized we are actually live on YouTube. I don't think Twitch is working, but anyways, let's see if we can do this. We've had scheduling problems on my side for the last week, and today we've had numerous tech problems. So we're actually like 20 minutes late trying to get this to work. Oh my God. All right. Technology, right? Never works when you need it. If I was just sitting here
Exactly.
playing around, it would work perfectly. But anyways, all right. We made it. I'm gonna throw a wrench in our schedule just to
Okay.
keep things lively. And I know we usually end with movies, but why don't we start with movies? Because I have two that I want to talk about.
Okay.
Maybe three, but could I put you on the spot? And do you have a movie recommendation since we haven't talked for about 3 weeks now?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I
Yeah.
got something I can talk about.
All right. Well, I'll let you go first
Sure.
then.
Okay. Well, I watched a movie called Begonia. I don't know if you've seen that. But it's about a couple of guys who think that a CEO is an alien, essentially, and then kidnap her.
Yeah. Wow.
And then things in the plot ensues. So I don't want to spoil anything about it, but
Okay.
it's pretty good.
Okay. Well, I'll add it to my watch list then because we're hurting for a little bit of content. So over the holidays we watched Troll and Troll 2,
Oh, nice.
which are fantastic
Classic.
movies. Like both of them we were like, "Oh yeah, these are great movies." We watched in two parts. We watched the final Mission Impossible because it
Ooh.
really is two movies.
Yeah.
It's like almost 3 hours long. So we both really enjoyed that one.
Worth watching, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. If you like the other Mission Impossible movies, you'll like this. And Tom Cruise is at his finest in it. It's a good flick, right? It's a Mission Impossible movie. So you know kind of what to expect. And then the other thing that we made it through, we just finished actually Friday or Saturday, I can't remember when, was Stranger Things 5.
Oh, okay.
You
Yes.
watched it?
Yeah, we have. Yep.
Without any spoilers, what do you think? What did you think of it?
When I was watching it, I was like, okay, this is fun. This is a good Stranger Things season. Good
Yeah.
enough. It's definitely not the worst Stranger Things season I've seen, right?
Yeah.
I didn't really enjoy the arc where they send Hopper to Russia, for example. That whole season was kind of whatever, but this was fine. There
Yeah.
was a lot of like little planning sessions they did. So you'll see a meme out there where they kind of, how do we get to this place? Well, imagine this is a Twinkie and this is
Yeah.
a,
Yeah.
this Bugles is the town or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Like
Yeah.
a lot of that stuff, but.
Yeah. It reminded me, you know what? Like I agree with you. At first I was kind of like, but the finale, which is pretty much a movie, right? I thought it was probably the best episode of the season. I really
Oh, for
enjoyed
sure.
it. I was kind of on the fence for most of it, but I wanted to kind of see how the story ended. And the final scene where they're kind of, I don't want to give too much away, but they're kind of finishing up some stuff. Just as an 80s kid myself and playing D&D when we were
Oh, right.
Early teenagers and stuff like that, I said to somebody else, like, that got me in the feels, that one. It was, I really enjoyed the finale and that planning thing that you were saying. I totally get it. And you know what? It felt to me like the final Mission Impossible movie. They do a lot of that. Okay, we're
Oh
gonna do
yeah.
this, we're gonna do this, we're gonna do this, we're gonna do that. And they kind of play it all out and you see little snippets of it happening, and then they sort of go and do it in it, and it I really enjoyed it. And as you said that I was like, hey, wait, that kind of reminds me of the Stranger Things finale. So, or the Stranger Things season, really, the whole thing. So Yeah, I know it's not. I know when it's not getting necessarily a lot of love, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, it's kind of like peak nostalgia for that time period, right? And it's what do I want to say? It's kind of like Ocean's 11, that whole thing, right? They're doing the Ocean's 11 thing where you kind of talk about the plan, and then the
Yeah.
plan happens in the background. It's
Yeah,
like that
exactly.
clicks.
Same sort of thing, right? All right. So enough movie talk. Let's dive into why we're really here. And it's been a while, so I know some of these announcements are a little old at this point. But we are playing catch up here to get started. So let's start as usual with the AWS updates. And I mentioned to you sort of before we ironed out all of our technology issues that I put these in just kind of random order. So the first one that you had shared was, I'm not sure if it's a, actually, I think this was an AWS blog post, not a news update, but it was about streamlining your containerized GitLab runners with
Yes.
Amazon EKS Auto Mode. I have some thoughts, but I'd like to sort of hear what you think of this one first.
For sure. I mean, this just ties back to how do you make your CI infrastructure kind of as automated and non finicky as possible, right? Like, how do you make it easy to deploy? And this is maybe not worthwhile if you're single, if you're just a small team hosting your own GitLab instance, for example, or if you're using the Cloud Runners. But if you're a larger org, maybe this is a good way to kind of abstract away your infrastructure management using, and I don't know, have you used Auto Mode at all very much?
No.
Okay. Well, it's pretty handy. It's kind of just like built-in Carpenter, right? So if you're familiar, that's like the instant sizing management kind of service you can run on your cluster, for example. But AWS kind of takes care of that in auto mode. So I thought this was kind of interesting just because we've used GitLab so much over the years. And we tried to set up the autoscaling group a couple times, and it wasn't really worth it for us. And this probably isn't worth it for a small team. Excuse me. But if you're a bigger team, this might be worth
As
looking
soon
at.
as it's yeah, I agree. I think the thing that got me with this one, as soon as I read EKS, I'm like, oh, wait a sec. And this again seems to me like if you're big if you're a Kubernetes shop and you run it, you want to run Kubernetes in AWS, then yeah, EKS makes sense, right? But like right away, I'm like, I would hate for somebody to take this and say, well, in order to run GitLab runners, if we want to run them on AWS, then we need EKS and we need this thing called automate. Like it seems so insanely complicated for 99% of the people out there. That's what sort of caught my eye with this. And the other, this is just another article in a long line of articles about running GitLab runners on AWS using different technology, right? And the other thing that I kind of thought about this, and I have customers running EKS. Generally, we're running Fargate now. So I was kind of like, I wrote a little note here as I was reading the article. I'm like, so what's the difference between EKS Auto Mode and Fargate? And why wouldn't I just use Fargate? Like the way I think about Auto Mode is it's to your point, it's sort of built-in autoscaling like Carpenter, but managed by AWS for an EC2 launch type. So you're running EKS as the orchestration on top of EC2 instances running in your account. And I have a hard time wanting to do that. You know what I mean? Like if I can get away with Fargate, I don't care if I'm using EKS or ECS, I'm using Fargate. I don't want to see that infrastructure. I don't want to manage it. And this seems like I think this just a general meh I have with AWS. And I think it's another example of how they build primitives, which I don't have a problem with, but then they throw all the primitives out there and then they expect users to figure out what the hell they're supposed to use, right? And I think it's another example of yet another way to do the same thing on AWS. And it just makes it more confusing to people that aren't heads down on this stuff every day, all day. That was my take on it. I don't know. Maybe I'm being a little overly critical, but I just kind of was like, ugh, do I care? I mean,
you might not care, right?
Yeah.
But like, I think if that's a fair takeaway, there's a million ways to do the same thing, right? It's yet another place where you can run these runners. You can run them on five different services, right?
Yeah.
But the use case for auto mode is if you have, for example, the need for spot fleet, maybe if you want to use spot instances in your cluster to run these on, you can do that. It depends on like if they're long running services too, like how long your build process is. Maybe you have intense integration tests that you're running on these. So depending on those parameters, it might be more cost effective to just run them on EC2 instances.
Maybe.
Or if you have the RIs kicking around too, you can do that.
So I guess, if you've already got the infrastructure sitting there, you've paid for it some other way and you want to repurpose it. Hadn't thought of it that way.
It's more of a platform engineering play, really, if you look at it. Like, this is like something you run alongside Argo CD maybe, or things like that.
Okay.
And then kind of deployment.
Yeah. I think it's worth a read, right? I'll put all the links in the show notes when I publish this, but I think it's just always, it's like the theme we sort of ended the year with last year, and this will come up again today, is just, you know, using the right tool for the right job. And my challenge with this is it's just another tool. And I think sometimes
there's a lot of tools.
Yeah. It just can get, it's already a big, complex platform. And if you just keep throwing tools out at people at some point, like, how do you decide what the hell to use? I don't know. Yeah. So that's my thought on that one. The next thing we had has a really long title, but it was essentially an article that I think came out right at the end of the year. Again, it's not a news post, but it was about Amazon Threat Intelligence identifying a long-running threat targeting Western critical infrastructure. Did you see this one?
I did. I have seen this. And I've seen this mentioned other places. Yeah.
Yeah. So I made a few notes. So a couple things that jumped out at me. First off, when they say... I don't actually know if it's in the title, but it's years happening, right? And it's not, I think the thing that's important is it's not indicative of a problem on AWS or with AWS. It's how people are running workloads on AWS. And it's been going on since 2001. The article was written right at the end of 2005. So they basically summed it up saying 2021 to 2025. It is focused on Western organizations. I think it said primarily in the energy sector. And it's just indicative again of, I think, everybody making sure that they're practicing sort of some, I don't want to call them basic, but some just best practices, some things you should always do no matter where you're running your workload, on-prem, in a colo provider, or on a hyperscaler like AWS or one of the other providers. So what do you think about this one?
Yeah, so this post essentially discusses network devices, right, as like the main vector of compromising your network. So if you're running some sort of network gateway in your as part of your infrastructure, a lot of what people are seeing is there's a concentrated campaign to break into these devices and maybe find 0 days and exploit them on these things, right? Mm-hmm. So you really want to make sure that your gateways are configured appropriately, like you said, with best practices to prevent ingress, because that's essentially the weak point, like one of the major weak points of your infrastructure, right? That's once they get through that, they have access to your internal network. So
a couple other things that jumped out at me was this idea of somewhere in the notes, and I'm paraphrasing, it was like the attackers took their time. Like, just because they compromised that edge device doesn't mean they immediately used it to grab credentials. Instead, they just sort of waited and they just watched what they're seeing, you know, and it makes a lot of sense, right? Like, just sit, like you're in, just wait and see what happens. And you know, so I think it's that was kind of interesting. And then at the very bottom of the article, you know, is where we were talking about best practices, you know, using role first, don't use permanent credentials, the practice of least privilege, capturing logs. Like at one point, one of the most important logs that I use probably every day is maybe an exaggeration, but multiple times a week would be VPC flow logs. And they even call it out, like just log your network traffic. whether you're just doing VPC flow logs, whether you've got some sort of more, in-depth analysis happening there, but having those logs coming from services, applications, and things like that are going to give you insight into what's going on in your environment. And one of the things that I notice all the time is just the overlooking of the value of logs, right? You've got that
Oh, yeah.
typical three-tiered architecture, and you're like, where are your load balancer logs? Oh, I didn't know I could
We
do
don't set
that,
that up. Yeah.
right? Oops. So, where are your flow logs? Oops. There's just lots of opportunities there to have information about what's happening in your environments. And I think for me, the big takeaway from this entire article was like it's a great reminder of how important this stuff is, regardless of where your workloads are running, right? And the other thing was patch management.
Yes.
Remember the shared responsibility model. It's the
Yep.
most important one-page document in AWS, right? And it tells you clearly in there if you're running an EC2 instance, the operating system and everything above it is your responsibility. And people still to this day, and I don't think they're doing it purposely. There's a lot of moving parts. It kind of goes back to what I mentioned before. Just it's a big platform. It's complex. It changes a lot, and it's easy
There's a
to
lot of
kind of
knobs.
overlook stuff, right? So I think it's worth a read. Not so much about the fancy, probably Russian led kind of like that all makes for neat spy novels and stuff, but the
Yeah.
fundamentals at the very end are still really important, and it's a good refresh here as we start 2026.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who the bad actor is, right? If they can find that ingress into your network, they'll use it. And yeah, regardless, like it's interesting how much pain I've seen around configuring the patch managing services in AWS.
They're still
Like
hard.
it's not intuitive, yeah.
No.
So
Do you know how many times I've turned myself around backwards with trying to figure out patch management in SSM?
Oh yeah.
Like if you asked me to do it today, I'd figure it out, but I'd still be, well, I was going to say knee deep in documentation, but I'd probably end up using Kuro or something like that to help me navigate it now. But I would
Right,
still
yeah.
have to do that. Like it's not easy.
I mean you can kind of see the value of maybe like these kind of DevOps agents, right? Like if they can just hoover up all these logs for you or check if they're in place or not automatically, then
Well,
it's pretty useful.
it's a really good another thing to talk about just briefly is like the other services that are important to have in your AWS environment. Like, GuardDuty. I don't know if GuardDuty would have found this, but it's gonna look for anomalous activity in your account, right? Maybe it would flag it. But then like even thinking about things like Inspector, you were talking about sort of scanning and stuff, like Inspector will scan your EC2 instances and things like that. Now, if we're talking about edge devices, maybe from vendors that you're getting, like I don't know how that part would work, but I would
That's
think
tougher.
that it would be, again, probably good to have turned on in your account to do that type of stuff and at least give you a heads up that something's maybe not right.
Yeah, you still want to flag any traffic because maybe they're sending packets through your network to kind of scan what's going on, or you want to pick up that stuff as best you can, right? So that it just makes sense.
One other thing just popped into my head and we'll move on is just I was thinking about the services that you could use to maybe help identify this type of stuff, whether you're dealing with this or just day-to-day stuff is detective, right? So having detective there to try to identify some root cause for you maybe might even be helpful. You combine these things together, right? All these different data sources.
Yeah, those are the key ones if you see any of these things flagged in guard duty.
All right, the next thing on our list was, I think, more of a quality of life update. I'm going to leave this one to you, is the Secrets Manager announcing
Oh,
that
God, yeah.
through the API you can do sorting now.
So this is, maybe not the, I mean, it's a small item, right? But this is something that's caused me some personal pain. So I'm happy to see it finally improved the search window, search bar on Secrets Manager. So thank you.
I
I'm
could
sure.
think, yeah, I could think of a couple other things where they need some help on the search functionality. We were
Oh, yeah.
talking about SSM, right? Like the
Yeah.
SSM documents search, it's a nightmare,
It's not
right?
great.
It's not great. I can think of a couple where I'm sure if I sat and thought about it, I could think of a couple other places that could use some help. But it's nice to see these types of quality of life updates happening, right? I don't use Secrets Manager a whole lot. So I haven't experienced this myself, but sorting and helping with search is always good.
Yeah, especially once you get into the hundreds of secrets that you're maintaining, it's
challenging.
It's kind of a lifesaver.
Yeah. And I would also say that this goes back to something that's really not technical, but having a process and a naming standard around these things is equally as important, right? I know I've run into this myself in Parameter Store, right? If you're storing things in Parameter Store and everybody just names it whatever they want, your life is going to be miserable in short order trying to figure out what the hell all this stuff is, right? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then the last thing you shared was, it doesn't look like it's directly from AWS. I'm just looking at the URL, but it was a CloudWatch update that extended telemetry information from services. Does that one ring a bell? I'm having a hard time pulling that one to the top of my memory.
Yeah, I saw this before the new year, and they were essentially saying that you could configure these telemetry services automatically in the organization.
Oh, okay.
That was article. But yeah, I'm seeing that the blog post is gone.
Oh, that's weird. Yeah, I, you know what? I wonder if I ran into that too, because I have it in my cheat sheet notes that I always create, but I normally have a few little notes about it as well, and it's empty. So... yeah, I don't know. Maybe we'll just leave that one under. You didn't hear it. It never happened. Yeah.
Flashed in your laser.
Yeah. And I know just before, while we were having our technical issues, you shared a couple other AWS updates. Do you want to just kind of quickly run us through those ones?
Yeah, let's go through those real quick.
I didn't put them on my cheat sheet because I was dealing with technical issues.
Understandable. Yes. So real quick, AWS Lambda added support for .NET 10, which is pretty handy if you're working in a Microsoft ecosystem. So keep an eye out for that. And then another thing I saw was the ability to do cross-modal search with Amazon Noble multimodal embeddings. So this is if you're implementing some kind of RAG architecture and you need a multimodal vector store, which we've talked about before, but this is how you essentially store references to your data for retrieval augmented generation. So it'll parse all of your documents and store them in state space, kind of with like a proximity algorithm. So if you're sending a query to that, you can pull up related documents to what you're querying is the idea. But now you can do images. So that's kind of handy.
Okay. Yeah. So you can basically, like when you say you can do images, you mean you can store those, vector models or vectors of those images in these different options, different storage options, I guess. Is that what we're talking about, or am I misunderstanding?
No, pretty much. Like what you would do is you would upload, you can include them images as part of your documents that you're uploading to your vector store.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay. Got it. Perfect.
And then wherever you're storing those. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You know what? I'm just getting back from break. I took a couple weeks off and I've been having a hard time getting back into the looking at AWS news every day just for things that are important. So pretty good stuff, I think. Let's change gears and talk about the AI updates. I'm gonna let you drive most of this. Let's start with Minimax. I have a few notes, but why don't you tell us about Minimax?
Sure. So this is another, in the suite of open weight models coming out of China, right? It's yet another entry, and it's pretty good. Again, so it's interesting to see just this flood of models come out that are not proprietary, right? I mean, they're open, their training data is proprietary, but their actual weights are open, so you can run them locally and download them.
Yep.
And there was this one that came out, and there was one from ZAI that came out that was quite good, GLM 4.7.
Okay.
Came out over the Christmas break, essentially.
Okay. Yeah, I wrote a couple notes, and I was looking through the GitHub README page, and the first note was too many benchmarks for me. I get so turned around on the benchmarks. I'm like, what's this and that, and how's it? Ugh. So I think the takeaway, and I think it sort of echoes what you just said, was just the fact that we're ending up with so many different options for models now, right? Some proprietary, some open source or open weighted. And I think it goes back to sort of the conversation we had in December as we wrapped up the year, was just the fact that you're just going to have so many choices that I think that I don't know if if challenge is the right word, but it's the first thing that comes to my mind is that the challenge is going to be like, how do you know which model to use? And I think this is what throws me on the benchmarks, right? Like, yeah, sure, it does better than this, and it's a little less good than X, you know. I don't mean X's model, I just mean some other model.
Some
I
other,
just
yeah.
mean like, I think in the end, you're just gonna have to test them. You're just gonna have to try them in the field, and you're gonna have to run through for your specific use cases to see like, is it model A? Is it model B? Is it a combination of those models on different parts of your workflow? I think that's ultimately what we're coming down to, right? Or it's
Pretty
gonna
much.
come
And
to.
yeah, it's a huge problem in the space, right? Like, there's no good, reliable way to measure the performance of these things, like 100% of the time against each other, right? We do the people do or we do our best with the benchmarks, right? But yeah, essentially, it's like, is this tool actually generating stuff that you're using? Is it useful to you in your workflow? And that's, I mean, there's 100 models out there to choose from, right? Like, how do you ever go through and pick them? But yeah, this flood of open weight models, I think it's really to the benefit of developers and consumers for one thing too, because you just have so much choice.
So
So I
much
love to see
choice.
that.
I think so. And I think that's a good segue into the next link was auto code bench or benchmark. I don't know if I made a typo when I was making out my little notes here, but I'll let you talk about it. I'll just say one thing briefly. My note was C above, and just the fact that when I loaded it up, it was just like, you know, table after table of comparison of benchmarks. I don't know if you want to talk about it, but I think the point that I made from the last
Stance.
link was pretty much the same for this one.
I think that's fair. I mean, this struck me as interesting because it's coming from Tencent, which I don't know if you're familiar, but they're a Chinese gaming company that bought, they essentially buy up other titles and they produce a lot of mobile games, that kind of thing, right?
Oh, okay.
So they own League of Legends, among others. But besides that, this just struck me as interesting, because this is the one place I've seen that's given kind of a percentage success rate on what languages, like programming languages, these models are best at, across like a wide swath of models. And I want you, okay, so if you had to guess which programming language, like a large language model, is best at, what would you guess? What would
You
you
mean
be
like
the
the
one?
language in the model?
Like, if you have a programming task, like a coding task, and you want this tool to go off and do some agentic coding in your project, which language do you think has the best success rate for these tasks?
Which language?
Yeah, programming language, so like C++, Java, Go, that kind of thing.
I'm gonna just, you know, I would hope it's Python because that's where I spend most of my time and I have relatively good success, but I would suspect it probably isn't. So I'm gonna go with I don't know, TypeScript? Just
See,
guess.
Prolog is
Prolog.
like, I don't think Prolog's on this list, but that would be fun.
I have a
Halsey?
Prolog book. I'm going to bring it to the next one.
Oh, that's awesome. No, I would have guessed Python. And in fact, I did guess Python when I first heard about this, just because of the sheer volume of the training set, right? But actually, it turns out that these things are like 65% good on Python, and that this was as of Claude Opus 4.1. So this was like October, August. This was August of last year. But the language that they performed best on was Elixir, of all things.
Elixir. What is Elixir?
So Elixir is essentially, I mean, it comes out of the language that telecoms use, and it's escaping me right now what that Erlang, I think it was.
Erlang, okay.
I think.
Yeah, in chat, favorite mom said JS or TypeScript. Yeah,
Those are good
I don't know.
guesses too. I mean, JS and TypeScript perform slightly worse than Python.
Yeah.
Like Python's sitting at 65. The average is 75. But like things that perform better than Python are Shell, Go, Elixir, Julia, Kotlin, those kind of things.
Kotlin, yeah.
Rust performs slightly worse than Python.
Okay.
So I'm trying to think of what the correlation is there. Maybe it's like strong typing will help you out,
Maybe, yeah, maybe.
but I'm not.
Very structure, like a really sort of very specific structure that it has to follow or something, maybe.
And
Yeah.
so I'm wondering, no, but anyways, it's making me want to go check out Elixir. It's what I'm saying.
Another thing to add to your list. Yeah, that's great. That's great. Okay, so and that gets us to the speaking of graphs and tables and stuff, was the State of AI report that came from who published this? Remind me.
Oh, this was OpenRouter.
That was it,
So
OpenRouter.
they're an aggregation platform for access to various AI inference providers.
So I have a bunch of notes. So it's a big document with lots of graphs, and those graphs have lots of data on them. So like the print is like this big. So it's gonna, I'm sure there's more goodies spread throughout this thing, but I'll just kind of go through the notes that I made. And I think the first thing that I noticed, and I think it was right near the beginning of the documentation was, or the doc was, like those open weight or open source models, whatever you want to call them, are continuing to grow in just general token usage. Right? That I
That
think that
makes
was
sense to
like the
me.
very first part, right?
They're cheap and competitive, and that's why they're growing so fast, right?
Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong, I'll put you on the spot here a little bit, because I can't remember myself, was most of those open weight models are Chinese based too, aren't they?
The
Or a
vast
majority,
majority
yeah.
are coming out of China. Like there's the Qwen models that come out of Alibaba. There's a couple of other labs like ZLI or ZAI, sorry. And then you have, of course, I mean, there's the Llama models that came out of Facebook, but they're kind of not really in the competition at this point.
You know what? One thing you just jogged my memory, and I wish I had have written this down somewhere. I'm gonna see if I can find it, but like somebody was making a comment about what happened to the Llama models. Like they seem to be like 2024, where like they were everywhere. Everybody was running them locally and trying things and stuff with them, and they just sort of didn't disappear, but you don't hear about them.
Kind of their
Like,
language, right?
yeah, maybe Meta's back to trying to figure out how to use glasses and stuff.
Seems like, I mean, they had a bunch of, there was a bunch of, a lot of staff left Meta on the AI team. So there was some team restructuring that happened. Like they had Yann LeCun, right? Who was like one of the godfathers of this technology. He left to do his own thing. So I think there's still probably, I have no basis for this besides that, but they're probably still reeling from staff issues.
The next point that I wrote down was the model sizes, right? The small versus medium versus large. And my takeaway from that was the medium-sized models are growing. It seems to be at the expense of the smaller-sized models. And it goes back to the theme that I always say on these is just finding the right tool for the job. So maybe there people are finding like, the large models are too large for what they're trying to do. The small, it's Goldilocks, right? Small models, too small. But those medium models, they're just right, right? Like I don't know what you think about that, but I noticed in the graph it was a clear, you could see those medium models kind of nothing, and just whoosh, getting really big at the sort of the right-hand side of that graph.
And I think that there's that Goldilocks thing, and there's also like we just had a bunch of open weight, good, solid medium models come out, right?
Yeah.
In a short time span.
Do you? Yeah, no. Well, maybe you'll remember this from the. Do you remember what the parameter cutoffs were from that report? I should have written them down. I thought about it as I was writing my notes, and I was like, oh, yeah. And then I just kept going. I don't. What do they define as a small model? Do you remember? I can probably open it up too. Let me
Yeah, if
search
you can
up.
pull up the report, but I think like so a small model in my view would be like the GPT 20 billion parameter model, right?
Okay.
Like that's something that's designed specifically for mobile edge devices. Like
Yeah.
they want that to run on your phone. Medium-sized mod
Oh,
was something that you
you're
could.
close. You're close. So I found it here. What OpenRouter defines as a small model is a model with fewer than 15 billion parameters. A medium model is 15 to 70 billion, and a large is 70 or more, 70 billion or more. That's what their definition is, which I would suspect, is specific for this report. Maybe other people have different definitions of what those are.
No, that makes sense. That's about right, I think.
Yeah. What's my next note here? I don't think this is anything, just I don't know. I'm all tongue-tied here on a Saturday afternoon. They mentioned the reasoning models, right? The
Yes.
growth, the exponential growth of those reasoning models in 2025, which I don't think would come as a surprise really to anybody at this point.
No, yeah, after that DeepSeek paper came out, that essentially changed the game, right?
Yeah.
It's there's just so much more capability
Yeah.
on these reasoning models.
The
And you can,
next, oh, go ahead.
like I say, you can tune a non-reasoning model to a specific use case, right? But
Yeah.
you're gonna get more value.
The next thing I wrote down was both the prompt, the sizes of the prompts and the returns, what you're getting back from those prompts is continuing to like grow again. I'll use the same word, exponentially. So we're giving more information to the models, and the models are giving us more information back. And I think the note somewhere in the actual report said, I don't know if this was speculation or was backed up by data that they had somewhere else in the report, was just because models are increasingly being used for programming and people are giving it more and more information to try to get better results, I guess, right?
Yeah, like when you're using these things for agent decoding, you're sending essentially the files that are loaded into context back to the providers, right? So that the actual models can run on them. And it's kind of interesting to see that programming was at maybe it was a pretty low percentage at the start of the year from what I saw. And then it jumped up to like 50% in the middle. And I think that's just the boom happened and people are starting to see that these things are actually useful tools.
Zooming in on the graph right now. Yeah, programming increased from 11 to about 50% of all the tokens on OpenRouter.
That's crazy. And I bet like a lot of that has to do with the reasoning models too. Like you're churning, because you're churning those tokens, you're generating a lot more well, tokens essentially. So you're buffing that number up a lot. But I was really like, did you see the category breakdown of tokens being generated?
That's actually the graph that I zoomed in on. So, what were you gonna say?
I cannot believe how many tokens were being used on roleplay.
Yeah,
Because
it kind of caught me by surprise too. And on that, if you go through this and they talk about open and closed source, and I think this makes a lot of sense, is sort of the open source or sort of, DeepSeek and things like that are primarily being used for role play. And then the more proprietary things, at least up to this point, are being used for other tasks like finance and things like that. The role play thing kind of caught me by surprise, but I guess, in hindsight, think about it after. I follow a guy and he talks about how he, and I don't know what model he's using, but he talks about how he's basically playing one person D&D. And
Yeah, I
he's
believe it.
basically using an LLM to do that. So, that wouldn't fit in any of those categories. So that's role play, right? Like storytelling, helping you write fiction, D&D, like if you want to, one player D&D, hey, like it's
Or if
great at
you're,
storytelling and stuff, right?
yeah, or if you're a GM and you have a bunch of disparate like markdown files about your campaign and what's going on, you could probably it's probably pretty straightforward to just, hey, consume this and this and synthesize like a set or an encounter or something like that. So kind of cool.
Yeah,
It's
kind of cool.
interesting that people are doing that.
Yeah, I just have work blinders on all the time, right? So like I just think about how I use these for work. I exist in my little slice, and I would say like 98%. Well, I'd say 100% of what I ask these things is technology. And I would say 98% of it is directed, well, is 100% directed at how do I do my day-to-day job, right? Like AWS, yeah. Like that's, I'm trying to think, you know, what have I asked ChatGPT? What have I asked Anthropic, Claude? I can't really think of any good examples off the top of my head where I've asked it something that is not technology focused, but that's just how I've used these tools from day one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same here. Like I very rarely will ask it anything that's not directly related to a product I'm working on or some task like that. Right.
Yeah. Obviously there are lots of people that are far more imaginative than you and I would probably way more fun ways to use these tools than how do I do this in AWS? Right. Yet again.
I'll query this API and tell me what the price of this thing is.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I need a hobby or two, I think is what this report is making me think of. And then the other thing that I noticed here was when it came to programming, speaking of programming, the absolute market dominance of Anthropic. I'm scrolling through the report now. They're estimating it, Anthropic about 60% of all the tokens used for programming categories.
Related.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. Yeah, related, close to 60%. And then the next closest is, it's kind of hard to look at those stack graphs, but I would say it's Google.
Yeah.
Which I was kind of surprised, to be honest, like not so much about, well, actually, no, because I use Kiro, which under the hood is Sonnet, right? Sonnet 4.5, I think, is the model it uses. So yeah, like, okay, that makes sense. But up until Google released Gemini, like 2.5 or Gemini Pro, 3 Pro or whatever it is, I didn't really hear good things about it for programming. Now, that's just anecdotal. Like I had never used it myself. So I was actually a little surprised to see it. If I'm looking at the little slices in the stacks, well, like appropriately, you know, all year Google was pretty much number two by a large gap to Anthropic. Mm-hmm. But I was a little surprised about that one. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. The Flash models were really good for that. Like they had niche applications. Like they were good for little tasks, or the fact that once they managed to integrate the Google search tool with those models, they became a lot more useful. But there were some surprising, like the Flash models were surprisingly capable. So that does not surprise me.
Okay. And then number three is OpenAI.
Yeah, makes sense.
It's funny. You look at this graph and you look back in May, OpenAI has a huge chunk and then it just disappears, right? Like there's this like flip between Anthropic and OpenAI, and OpenAI doesn't really recover. It's a small little slice until sort of the very end of this report, which we'll say is like November timeframe, looking again, making a few assumptions. It starts to get a bigger chunk again, but it's nowhere close to
it's Anthropic. Staring. Yeah, as soon as Sonnet came out, essentially, Claude 4 Sonnet and then Claude 4.5 Sonnet, they just kind of ate everything that's just the most capable model available, right? From in terms of speed and usefulness. Mm-hmm. And it kind of demonstrates like we don't really care who's providing the model. We'll just flip flop over. Is gonna this you're a developer?
Yeah. You have zero loyalty.
No brand loyalty. Yeah.
No. You just move to the tool that helps you get your job done faster and accurately, hopefully, right? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And it's like, it kind of brings into question, I don't know if you saw this over the last week, but there was some drama in the Twitter sphere about this.
I did not. You mentioned it. Why don't you walk us through it? I know we don't have any articles on it, but walk us through the drama that's happened.
Okay. So essentially what happened was there are a few. So Anthropic has a tool called Claude Code, right? Which is a terminal UI for interacting with their models. And you can use your Anthropic subscription on that tool. And there's various tiers of subscriptions. But essentially how it works is you get a much better deal on tokens for fixed cost over a year subscription or whatever, right? Like you can get $200, you can get pay $200 for like thousands of dollars worth of value is the idea. But what Anthropic didn't want was you using that subscription on other terminal UI or coding, agentic coding platforms, right? So there's a tool called OpenCode, and they essentially blocked access if you have a cloud subscription to use it on that tool.
Mm-hmm.
And it was essentially a land grab to try and lock you into their ecosystem, right? So what happened was there was a big stink on Twitter after that, as there usually is, the Twitter tradition.
People get wound up on Twitter, really?
Crazy thought, but
yeah.
I was actually working with, like, I had a, like, the pro subscription for Anthropic, and I was working on it at, like, 1 a.m, working on a side project, and I suddenly saw that I was blocked. It made me so mad, I started posting.
You started
for
what?
The first time. I started posting for the first time.
Well,
I have, like, no tweets on my account, basically, and I was just like, come on. This is ridiculous.
Sure, in such a rage early in the morning, you had to start your Twitter account. That's funny. Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But they, there was such a stink that they eventually reverted it, like maybe a day later. So now they're working with OpenCode and other platforms to get that working. But another funny fallout of this was that they banned the XAI team from using Anthropic models on Cursor, which I didn't realize that they could do, but that's kind of an interesting tweak. And it's like a very Anthropic move and a very Microsoft feeling move too. Right. Like just that kind of big company lock you in kind of feeling.
Yeah.
And it rubbed me the wrong way. I think even more because it's a terminal app, right? Like it's, that should be like a pretty open ecosystem. So
The conspiracy part of my brain, just because of the companies you're talking about, just thinks there was some shenanigans going on. Like, like they've got some sort of internal data that says it's being used in a certain way that is, you know, against maybe the end user license agreement, maybe
probably
sort of their philosophy, you know, because I know Anthropic has a very kind of way they like to approach these things. So maybe there was a little difference in the way they thought things should go. I would suspect on that part of it, there's probably a story nobody will ever really know unless it continues to get more and more heated. But I just want to believe that there was some shenanigans happening and this was a way to get them back in line, maybe. Right.
I could see that. I mean, they're essentially losing money on those subscriptions, right? They must be.
For
There's
sure.
No way.
Yeah. And plus, you know, not to name any names, but I'm pretty sure that the other side of that equation has pulled a few levers here or there when they decided they didn't like what somebody was doing. So karma's a bitch, I guess. Right.
That's fair.
And do you have any other notes from that report that we haven't gone through already?
Not really. It's just kind of interesting to see as soon as these cheap, capable models show up, they tend to take a decent sized chunk out of the market, it looks like. So again, people are willing to flip flop.
Yeah, I would suspect you'll see it happen more and more. It's the theme that you and I have talked about a couple times, right? It's just the right tool for the job. And the only way you'll know that is to test your outcomes, right? Again, using different models and find the thing that works best. And if it happens to be one of the open weight ones, so be it. If it's one you pay for, like from one of the big companies, then it's a cost of doing business. But if you can get away with isn't the right word, but if you don't have to use one of those models, right? Why not? Yeah.
Exactly.
And you've made me think of something on this last link here. So in another Discord channel I'm in, somebody shared this. It's called Jeff CEO. So if you go to the domain, it's just jeff.ceo. And it is, it's an Anthropic solution. Like it's built on, actually, I should be careful I say that. It looks like when it originally came out, it was Anthropic, but now you can use all sorts of different models with it. But essentially, you can tie it to Gmail. And I shouldn't say Gmail. Let's say your Google account, which could consume your Gmail, your contacts, your calendar. And it's basically a solution. I don't know if I want to call it an agent, but I set it up because I live in Gmail and I'm like, okay, look, what can this thing do? And I had to get some reassurances from the person that shared this with me, because when I configured it all and you do Google OAuth and it's like, this has not been verified by Google, right? And it's asking for a lot. I went back to this person. I'm like, are you sure about this? And they're like, I've been using it for, I think they said about a week, had no problems. So I'm like, well, what's the worst that can happen? So I connected it. It is pretty slick. The first thing it did was it asked me, so you go through like a little configuration wizard, and the thing that I love about this, and we were talking about Stranger Things, right? And to go back to the 80s theme, like I grew up on bulletin board systems. That was my first thing, right? The modem dialing in the back of my Commodore 64, you connect to, you know, somebody's BBS and you get that cool ASCII art, right? And people, I'm like, I'm still amazed. I'm like, people spent so much time building out this fantastic ASCII arts for their bulletin board system. And you're kind of seeing that come back in all these CLI tools, right? They've got that little
I love that.
ASCII thing. So Jeff CO is the same thing. So boom, you get the little thing. It looks very Claude-like in the sense that, you know, it gives you that little sort of terminal window. And it's like, oh, do you want me to walk you through the setup? And it's like, first I'll learn about your writing style. And it analyzes your inbox to come up with a writing style. All right. So I'm like, sure. Way it goes. And it says, hey, this is how you normally interact with people. It's casual, it's technical, it's kind of categorizes it, right? And I'm like, okay, well, a style guide, exactly. And then I'm like, well, tell me the most important emails in my inbox. And it's like, yep, here they are. These are the priorities, things that you should worry about now and things you don't have to worry about, that kind of stuff. And I was in the process of trying to find, you and I were talking about this, couple venues. So I'd reached out to this person and they actually wrote me back just as I was writing up or configuring Jeff CO. And it's like, hey, you got this email from X and it's about these venues. And I look at it and it's like, here's the summary of it. And they mention, hey, you should talk to this other person. So I went in and I said, okay, so review this email and craft up a new email to this other person and asking them about this stuff.
Okay.
So it did that pretty well. Like I looked at the email, it was in my drafts and I'm like, yeah, okay. It replied back to the original person, said, you know, basically thanks kind of thing. Really slick. Mm-hmm. Now I'm wondering if we were talking about the amount of tokens flying back and forth.
Right.
It all of a sudden stopped working with no errors. Nothing. Like, I don't know what I asked it to do. I can't remember what I asked it to do. And I've had this problem with not Kiro CLI. It seems to be okay. But if I'm using the Kiro IDE, it'll do this to me every once in a while, which is Claude under the hood, right?
Yes.
I typed in something, new prompt, right? Asked it to go do something, hit enter, and it starts churning away. And it just stops. I don't see tokens coming in. I don't see tokens going out. There's the little upload, download kind of thing they show you. Just stops. Yep. And I'm like, are you still there? And it's like, yep, I'm still here. I'll try again kind of thing. I almost wonder if I was getting throttled somehow, because it was throwing a lot of tokens back and forth. And I had my Anthropic API key set up and stuff. So I wonder if I was just getting throttled.
Did you have a subscription?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Yeah, you definitely were getting throttles. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So, you know, it supports other models. So I was going to do this yesterday and I got doing some other things and kind of lost track of time. I also pay for Gemini just as part of my Gmail thing. So I think we've talked about this before in true Google fashion, unlike how easy it was to set up my Anthropic API, I have to create a Google Cloud project and so I started and I was like, oh, screw this. And I just went off and did something else. But I think I might spend some time this afternoon and see if I can figure out this Jeff CEO, but tie it to my Google account instead to see the difference. First off, like the responses that it generates and stuff like that. But also, does it just mysteriously stop working without any feedback? It just sat there, right? So... But if you're a Gmail user and you have a certain level of trust, it's pretty cool. kind of neat. So
that is kind of, it's kind of interesting, right? And I feel like this is kind of where the, where Microsoft is probably going to go. Same kind of thing, where you have that agentic kind of system looking at your incoming, your inbox and your action items and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely a lot of trust to give my email over to, to a model, but you know what, if it's like a contained inbox, I could see it for sure.
Yeah.
And I guess we'll see if you miss anything in your emails.
Yeah. Well, I definitely wouldn't give it the keys to the kingdom in the sense, like I wasn't letting it respond and stuff. Like it would suggest something, put it in my drafts. I would read it and then sort of say send. I bet you could, if you were more trusting, I bet you could do some pretty crazy stuff with this thing based on just sort of what I saw do when I walked through pretty much the demo of it. So yeah, there you go. Another tool if you're a Gmail user and you have a certain level of trust that you could look at. And they were very explicit on their site. They're like, you know, we don't gather any of your data. We don't store any of your data. We don't use any of your data from learning. It stays where it is, but we use it to help you basically manage your contacts, your calendar, and your email.
Okay.
Yeah. And then one thing that I really thought was cool, because I was working on this myself, was it will also manage your calendar. And I kind of took it that if somebody wrote you an email, hey, are you available? You could, instead of doing the back and forth, I'm available at these slots, and that person's like, I'm available at these slots, you could have it generate some slots, but then if those slots don't work, it can send a link that the person could use to find some time in your calendar without having to use another service. But I didn't try that because it just suddenly stopped working. So
fair enough.
Yeah.
Gotta make Calendly scared, I guess.
What's that?
It's gotta make Calendly scared.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a couple of those companies that are calendar orchestrators basically, right?
Oh yeah. I would say there's probably more than you could count on two hands. How many people have made decent money with calendar orchestration. And I would suspect that an agent could do that for you. And I bet you there's a couple smart people working on stuff like that right now.
Totally.
As long as you trust the agent to do it.
Yes. Yeah. That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's not determinate. Well, yeah, I'm sure you could get it working pretty well.
I think
This reminds me of, this reminds me of the people who were trying to get 100% AI run companies going. Like 2 years ago.
Yep.
That whole Discord community.
Yeah.
So they're probably foaming at the mouth for this.
I think for like a solo operator like myself, like these kinds of things are, I don't know if I've used this term, but I've seen this term like a force multiplier, right? Like, obviously you want to be very careful with it. I would not let this thing just do its own, like I'm asking it to look at my inbox. I'm asking it to help me prioritize stuff. Like it's not in there operating 100% on its own, right? I would be a little nervous about that. But just being able to sort of at the end of the day say, show me everything that was of high importance or critical that I didn't reply to that you think I should and tell me why. Like having that type of help, it's like a virtual assistant, right?
Yeah. The alternative to this would be an assistant, right?
Yeah. Essentially. Yeah. Somebody managing that inbox on your behalf, right?
Even if you have an assistant, this just helps them do their job.
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
Pretty cool, I thought. So I'm gonna keep kicking it around a little bit. I might change the underlying model this afternoon, sitting on the couch. Maybe I'll ask one of the programming. Maybe I'll ask Anthropic how to help me set up my Google project, because I just don't work in there at all. Right. So I'm like, what are you asking me to do? I don't get it. So anyways, I'll maybe sit on the couch, watch a bad movie and two screen it with Jeff CEO. So
nice.
Yeah. That's
Jeff.
Yeah. There you go. That's all I had on my side. Is there anything else that you had on your list?
No, I think that was pretty much it. Oh, there was one thing. I saw a tweet that Linus Torvalds is vibe coding.
Right? Oh yeah. So,
if the guy who wrote Linux is doing it, then
it can't be bad, right?
Well, it just means a lot of people are doing it.
Yeah, I would have to think anybody that is being honest with you is using Gen AI tools. and yeah. probably vibe coding. As much as we like to talk about spec driven development and agentic workflows, I would have to think that most people are, what's the word, one-shotting it still. Hit enter Definitely. And hope for the best.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, thanks for the flexibility on getting this scheduled on a Sunday afternoon. Enjoy the rest of your day off. And yeah, we'll be back. It'll be a short break, I guess, this time. We'll try to stick to the regular schedule. Better start finding some articles for Wednesday evening.
Yeah, we'll see what news comes out in the next 3 days.
Well, the way it goes nowadays, there'll be like a whole bunch of new models. Anthropic will be, Anthropic will be saying that they're better than OpenAI, and then OpenAI will have their new model all by Wednesday.
Yep.
Perfect. All right, man. Absolutely. See you soon.
Take care.
Okay. Bye.